Welcome to Growing Indoors, a limited podcast series from Cannabis Business Times, brought to you with the support of FOES. Protected from surges, dust, debris, mites, spores, and water, the A3i by FOES is an unstoppable powerhouse of a grow light, capable of unrivaled output of high-intensity full-spectrum light. Industry-leading lenses focus more light to hit more of your canopy, while spectral customization provides light for all stages of growth. Passive heat management and power ramping features give the A3i grow light efficiency figures that remain unmatched, and diodes that always operate at peak efficiency. Every company boasts about being the best, but FOES proves it. Visit FOES.com, that's FOHSE.com, to request your free custom lighting plan and schedule a facility tour. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor for the Cannabis Group at GIE Media. We're very pleased to continue our 10-episode project, where we're focusing our interviews on indoor cannabis cultivation from a broad spectrum of angles. This is episode 6. We've got two guests on the show this week, Matthew Kispert, Vice President of Cultivation at Buckeye Relief, and Zach Foligno, Director of Irrigation and Controls at Buckeye Relief. Located in East Lake, Ohio, just east of Cleveland, Buckeye Relief is a level one cultivation and processing company. We got into a lot of really great in-depth information here, particularly about the company's recent second story expansion. So if you're considering vertical growing of any kind, tune in. With that, please enjoy my conversation with Matt Kispert and Zach Foligno. Matt and Zach, welcome to the show this week. Very glad to have you both here representing the Buckeye Relief team in Ohio. We've had some Ohio guests in the past, and as an Ohio resident myself, very glad to shine a light on the Buckeye State always. So it's good to have both of you. Very eager to dive into some indoor ag discussion. Before we really get going, though, I did want to just maybe open the floor to both of you, Matt and Zach, to maybe describe the Buckeye Relief facility, maybe some of the characteristics that are most notable. I know that last year there was an ongoing expansion and a second level that's now live. But if you could maybe just describe the facility for the listeners and some of the traits that we'll be talking about in a moment.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, this is Zach talking, by the way. Like you mentioned, we underwent a facility expansion last year, which involved pretty much doubling all of our grow area to twice the size that it was last year. It's been quite an exciting run doing all that, and then seeing all that kind of develop and take form into the processes and just production that we have nowadays. So yeah, our facility is pretty much doubled in size, and
we're fully indoors, Northeast Ohio. We're just under an acre of canopy right now. Usually at any given point in time, there's somewhere around 20,000 plants in the building. We are fully LED. Like Zach said, we are two leveled at this point in time. We use mobile racking, drip irrigation. We grow in rock wool. Now we're very data driven facility. So a lot of the choices we made with regards to lighting, substrate, environmental controls, all of that was kind of hinged around, do these systems fit into our, growing style of being focused on data collection and making data-driven decisions for how we steer the grow. So that's kind of why we went the LED route. It's why we went the drip irrigation route. It's why we went with rock wool. Those are all just very controlled growing systems that kind of gives us more capabilities in steering the plants. And we get to be a little bit more responsive. Obviously, with those types of systems, it is a double-edged sword where you have really good control over everything, but if you steer them in the wrong direction, you realize that very quickly because there's not a lot of buffer with drip irrigation and rock wool. But we've spent the last almost 4 years now honing our system in and learning a ton and expanding in the process. And it's been an awesome journey so far.
Excellent. Yeah, certainly a few threads that we can pull at and go down, certainly including the second level and some of the environmental controls you mentioned there. But real quick, just wanted to talk a bit about that idea or that action of doubling a grow area, more or less. And I'm curious what the planning process might have looked like there. I know a lot of our listeners have either gone through expansions themselves, or they may be considering them down the line. I'm curious, just as maybe forming this into a coherent question here, if doubling the grow area might mean doubling all other inputs and resources, whether that's staffing or other inputs, or if it's a bit more complicated than that.
It's definitely a bit more complicated than that. Nothing was exactly doubled other than probably the number of tables in the rooms. We knew before the building was even constructed that we were eventually going to add a second level. And because we were purpose-built, we took that into account during the design and planning phase of the building. All of the ductwork, the wiring for the lighting, the sizing of our electrical system, all of that stuff during the initial construction of the facility was done with the eventual intention of adding a second level. Basically, we built this place to be plug and play for the second level. When it came time to double everything up, each of our four rooms took less than 2 weeks to get the second level installed, operational, and full of plants.
Awesome. I think the second level is a super interesting aspect here. So maybe we can spend time there, for a minute here. One thing that's come up a lot in these interviews and just in a lot of stories that Cannabis Business Times has run in the past is like literal floor plan foot traffic considerations and how employees and plants are moving through a facility. Of course, with the second level, that's introducing a bunch of other not variables per se, but just characteristics to navigate. What are some of the maybe just baseline challenges of working with a second level?
The biggest challenge, honestly, is fitting enough people in the rows at a time. So with the PIP mobile racking that we have, we can only have four walkways at any given point in time in the rooms. And so with those four walkways, we have multiple tasks per day that we're trying to do. We're trying to have our IPM in there to get eyes on the plants. We're trying to have the cultivation teams in the rooms to do their various tasks, pruning, defoliating, trellising, training plants, et cetera. We have to try to schedule in our data collection team to get in and take their crop performance metrics measurements that they take. We have our irrigation team that needs to get in there to check the irrigation zones and make sure everything's watering correctly. And so it's juggling all those pieces around the board has probably been the biggest challenge. We operate everything on a 3-week schedule. Now, we use a color coding system for our 3-week schedule just as a way to kind of quickly help everyone know what's they're going to face each week, because this 3-week schedule is kind of like Groundhog's Day, where we repeat the same tasks every 3 weeks. And so each of our three color weeks are relatively the same. So when we're doing these scheduling decisions, it kind of helps to be able to look at, our yellow week, green week, blue week, what tasks are we trying to accomplish in this time? What is the window available to do this? Which ones take priority over to the others? And then how do we move some around in case certain tasks take longer than anticipated? You're absolutely correct about the flow being the most challenging component of it. The schedule and everyone involved with creating our schedule, that has been probably the largest undertaking that we've done outside of physically building things, but it's also been the most rewarding part to see all those gears kind of moving in sync.
And to kind of expand on what Matt was saying too, it's pretty much, we doubled our grow area, but it didn't really double this space that we have to work with. So yeah, like you said, it is a challenge getting in there with all these different groups of people and almost twice as much employees that we deal with now. It's definitely a lot of space issue within the room itself, but not only that, but when you double a facility like that, there's a lot of other things like materials that you work with that need to be doubled as well. So finding space to even store all that in your hallways that you might not necessarily plan for is a challenge in itself. So foot traffic, not even in alone in the room, but also outside of the rooms with all of our new equipment that we have, all of our new materials that we're re-upping on every 3 weeks, like Matt said, in our cycle. That's a challenge in itself to store that and then deal with that outside of the grow rooms as well.
Yeah, we try to run lean, so we don't like having a big inventory, but with the last 3 years and the world being what it is, we've had to like have a larger standing inventory of certain necessary supplies, and finding storage space for those has been interesting. The other thing, like space-wise, is equipment to access the second level. So rolling staircases, lifts, ladders, all those sorts of things. Well, you need to stick those somewhere when they're not in use. And so we did plan for that to some degree with the size of the perimeter walkways and all the rooms, but they still take up a lot of space. And so we've actually, in the early stages of adding the second level, we're working with the racking supply company PIP and helping like test out prototypes for this catwalk system that they wound up marketing out. And that has been a game changer for us. Basically, it allows us to quickly assemble and disassemble this catwalk in each of our walkways, where instead of having, you know, these two, maybe three really long rolling staircases that we would have to drag up and down the rows every single time and max fit two or three people in the rows working, we can assemble this catwalk within like 2 minutes max and have 5 to 6 people on a catwalk working on the upper level plants. And it's basically like working on the ground at that point, like the comfort level with walking around and standing. And it was a complete game changer for us, that catwalk system.
Yeah. At one point we were using big clunky yellow scaffolding that you would see with like on a construction site or painters. And that was a nightmare to pretty much roll around the room. So yeah, like Matt said, this new catwalk system is a real game changer for us.
So we probably purchased every iteration of ladder, rolling ladder that you can think of over the last year until we wound up finally getting the catwalk system from PIP.
Nice. Yeah. I was going to ask just, I feel like maybe we're already sort of discussing it, but was going to ask about the challenges, particularly of taking down a room at harvest and getting material into, you know, further along the cycle of drying and curing. When we're talking about a second level, the drying and curing rooms are still on the first level, or have you built out more of those as well?
So our dry room is somewhat vertically arranged as well. We also wound up installing mobile racking in the dry room. And in there, we just hang the plants on these racks that are 16 feet tall. So they're purpose built for hanging these plants. We kind of custom designed the width of them. Each of the racks has, I don't know, 4 or 5 levels on it with bar, like crossbars and hooks. And then we hang the full plants because we whole plant hang our plants to dry. We just go bring them in that room after they've been entered into the state tracking system and then hang them each individually on these hooks. And then we can roll the racks back and forth to move the airspace around and check on the plants during the drying process. But yeah, getting the plants off the second level down onto the ground level where they're hung up on Z carts, the trellis is removed, and then they're rolled out into the dry room. That was definitely a process too, figuring out how to do that.
Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to touch on sort of within this second level, physical space that we're talking about, I just wanted to maybe zoom in on just the vertical mobile racking more specifically even. And I guess what I wanted to ask there was from one rack to the next, how different might those individual crops be? And I guess what I'm saying is between, the environment overall, humidity levels within the overall room, even lighting levels from rack to rack, are those racks treated differently or are they a bit more homogenous than maybe it seems?
Yeah, so our racks, for the most part, environmentally are treated the same. They really get their individuality when it comes to watering. We can't really control microclimates as well as we would like to in a room that the size that we have. So when it comes to lighting, we try to pretty much give every plant the most lighting that they can possibly handle. So they're all pretty much getting a uniform lighting schedule and lighting intensity throughout their life. Same thing with the environmental schedule. It's hard to, like I said, hard to control like a microclimate. So we pretty much treat the entire room as a whole when it comes to environmentals. But when you get to irrigation, we actually have, let's say 50 racks total in our room, and every 10 racks is split up into its own irrigation zone. And we have the ability to individually control each of those 10 irrigation zones. So we try to keep different cultivars that have different watering and irrigation needs and fertilizer or nutrient needs kind of together grouped within those same zones. So we have the ability to kind of really meet the needs of that specific cultivar. And that's really where we get that customization in the room.
As far as variability in the rooms go, the lights are pretty uniform. The throw on the fixtures that we have on the lower level, they're pretty wide. So we always have a default return to zero spacing, if you will, where we reset the room when we're done working in it. Every rack gets spaced out, I don't know what it is, like 4 to 6 inches, something like that, at its resting position. And the light is relatively uniform across it. The upper level where we have our original lighting fixtures, which are single bar fixtures as opposed to the multi-bar fixtures that are on the lower level, there we do see some variability across the canopy between the fixtures. So obviously directly below the LED runs, there's going to be a higher intensity than in between. A couple of our cultivars show that they're like growing slightly differently depending on the intensity that they're getting. It's kind of fun in a weird way to like look at the canopy and see where it looks like a wave pattern, like in between the lights and below the lights. That's not terribly dramatic, but it is noticeable. As far as like the upper level to the lower level, definitely is a difference there. Our rooms are set with the HVAC units on the roof, and all of the diffusers that are blowing like air into the room are on the ceiling. So our upper level tends to be a little drier than our lower level and a little cooler in some spots. We've done every iteration of mixing fans, horizontal air fans that you can probably think of, duck socks. We, in our beta testing phase of the second level, to try to figure out the best airflow design for the rooms. At this point in time, in our current iteration, we're fairly happy with it. There's probably innovations and changes and stuff that we could do. Again, I think that this is kind of a moving target. And obviously, as the industry develops more and more, companies are going to be getting into this space and developing solutions for these problems. So we're always open to looking at changing things up with the mixing fans. Right now, our current iteration has 12-inch fans on every other table mounted to the racks themselves that are on the lower level. And then we have wall-mounted fans on the upper level. And it works pretty good. Obviously, there's an edge effect. If you walk around the room with our FLIR camera, you can see that the perimeter is always drier slightly than the inner part of the canopy. That's to be expected, though. There's really no way around that. But we're fairly happy with the mixing that we're seeing right now.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm curious if maybe you could talk a bit about the, I guess, ongoing trial and error of different cultivars. And I'm, you know, maybe irrigation is a good example here, or maybe humidity is. But I guess, what does that learning curve look like when, you know, cultivar A is in a certain part of the room and maybe it's not thriving and needs to be moved to a different part of the room during the next cycle? I guess, I mean, this is surely just an ongoing process with all these different cultivars that are being juggled, but what are some of the ways that you and the team are identifying how to handle the nuances of each specific cultivar, if that makes sense?
Yeah, sure. So the first kind of hurdle was figuring out, you know, what plants can be put up top and what plants can stay down below. And that came from more of a general morphology standpoint. Some of our cultivars are just tall and we had to get rid of them outright because they were too tall that we couldn't grow them down below because they'd grow into the lights. We couldn't put them up top because the team just physically couldn't safely access the upper mid part of the canopy to work on. So we unfortunately had to part ways with some of those for that reason. We then kind of look at, you know, the ease of working with the plants. You know, can we defoliate them well? Do they have nice internodes? Do they have really like well-developed petioles that are snapped off easily? Those are plants that we like to kind of intersperse throughout the room to make it easier for the team. Nobody wants to slog through a really, really dense like canopy for hours and hours and hours on end. So we try to break it up a little bit by swapping around the different archetypes of the plants. So they're a little easier to work on, kind of this punctuated parts of the day. We take a lot of measurements. So every single week during the veg cycle and then all the way through the sixth, seventh week of the flowering cycle, we're taking height measurements off every single cultivar. Now we have historical data going all the way back to the beginning of those height measurements. And we actually use that information to produce predictive height curves for each cultivar. And that is how we determine the trellis height for our first initial trellis placement. So we've realized pretty early on that most of our plants have relatively predictable growth curves in flower. So like our Lemondoses, they tend to stretch about 210% of their veg height, while our Grapefruit Sour Dream tends to stretch maybe 40% of its veg height. And so using that information allows us to kind of decide where we want to put those plants and how to do the trellising on them. The other thing we look at is table density. So is the plant more of a vertical growing tall plant? Is it wider? We kind of look at those and use that information to decide if we're going to put, you know, 16 plants per table, 12 plants per table. We had one plant that was more of a short little shrub that we ran at 24 per table for a while there. At the end of the day, the number that matters the most is the gram per square foot of finished trimmed flower. So that's like kind of the metric that we look at after every single harvest and use that number to decide, you know, did the decisions that we made this round impact it one way or the other? And what's the quality of that flower look like? And we've actually seen some of our cultivars where the yield and the quality substantially improved when we reduced the planting densities. And just because I think that, you know, fewer stems per table allowed the stems that were on those tables to develop more fully, and we had less inner canopy, like low light buds that were just kind of, maybe they were adding slightly to the total yield, but they were detracting from the trim flower yield. And so by juggling the table densities around, well, we saw some of those numbers improve. The other thing we look at is we actually measure the circumference of the top buds of our plants week 8 and look at and see how like our pruning topping affects that number. And then some plants will top more heavily to reduce the bud size. Other plants, we won't top as heavily and we'll increase the table densities to try to get that size up. The irrigation team goes through and they measure, you know, what the drybacks, they're looking at like the water consumption rates of each of the cultivars and using that information to block them into similar irrigation zones like Zach kind of touched on, where we have essentially 10 irrigation zones per room. So obviously we have our plant friends list, we call it, where these plants grow really well next to each other. So they tend to stay in the same zone. and then we'll move plants around. The latest thing that we've been doing to manipulate the plants is being a little more aggressive on our veg times. So we typically run a 5-week veg, but some of our varieties now we run a 3-week veg, and we're even adding an additional clone cutting day so we can run a 4-week veg. All of this for the sake of having a more uniform veg height. So that way, you know, regardless of the variety, if they're all leaving veg around the same height, then they finish closer to the same height in the flower room. So like our tallest variety, our 92 cookies, that's one of our 3-week veg plants. When they actually leave the veg room, they're maybe 18 inches tall, but they're finishing at, you know, approaching 6 feet by the time they're ready to harvest. So that's one plant where on our growth curve, it just doesn't stop growing. So that's been an interesting variety to work with. It's one of our favorites though.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. And the predictive height curves really jump out at me as just a really great illustration of, I guess, the power of tracking observations along the way and using historical data and, you know, having that data on hand to be able to make the leap to a tighter veg cycle, knowing that, you know, with all likelihood, it'll work out in the end. You know, I guess what, you know, one thing I wanted to sort of do was maybe back into, I guess, a sort of a summary question. Something that you guys had mentioned earlier was the 3-week schedule. And so I guess there's maybe two parts to this question. One of those is, across those 3 weeks, are a lot of or most of employees tasked with some of these more observational data points? Meaning, let's just take height as an example, or even circumference. Does everybody have a share in gathering that data, or is there a point person taking those measurements along the way?
We have two people that is their role is data collection. So okay. They go into every single room, they take the height measurements week by week by week. They take the bud and circumference measurements. For a while we were doing stem counts. That while is really good information, proved to be a bit much for a production facility of our size. So unfortunately we had to stop taking that exact measurement. But they were intentionally hired into those roles, and we kind of lean on their skill sets for collecting the data, analyzing the data, and then making suggestions and recommendations based off of their observations. We definitely take feedback from the whole team. The biggest feedback probably that comes from the team writ large is just working with the plants. You know, is this variety like something that the cultivation team likes to work with? Does it lend itself well to pruning, to defoliating? Some plants are a little more difficult to work with. The biggest concerning issue that we have are certain varieties that strip when you try to snap the leaves off. They don't have those clean incision joints. So when you go to pluck the petioles off, they wind up stripping instead or ripping. Training newer team members on how to avoid doing that is somewhat challenging. So those varieties, unless they're like really, really, really good final products, we try to steer away from varieties like that just because we don't like introducing all those sorts of wounding sites. And we'd rather work with varieties that are easier for the team than varieties that are like really, really like almost dreadful to approach.
Well, as just the last question, I did want to touch on the 3-week schedule again, because it stands out to me as super important. I know you guys said as much. Over time, I guess, how much of a work in progress was the development of that 3-week color-coded schedule, and how much is still sort of open to adjustment as time goes on?
So we pretty much jumped into that 3-week schedule almost immediately after we got into like a rhythm with even our first couple of like seed rounds that we had. It's kind of like a schedule that is more catering to like what the actual plant needs. So when we say like we have that 3-week schedule, yeah, we have a bunch of different departments that are going around on kind of their own 3-week schedule, like that data collection team with the IPM team, they're on like their 3-week schedule, the irrigation team's on a 3-week schedule. And then the staff alone is their 3-week schedule really consists of a lot of plant maintenance activities. So like pruning up the rooms, defoliating the rooms, the pruning and defoliating themselves takes weeks at a time. So two of the weeks out of that 3-week schedule alone, there are plant maintenance. And then the third week in our schedule has to do with harvest and cleaning. So we fell into that schedule fairly early after opening up the facility. And a lot of that schedule that was originally kind of laid out is something that we still follow to this day. When we introduce more and more departments and more people who have different skill sets, they kind of develop their own 3-week schedule along with that staff 3-week schedule. But yeah, to answer your question, it's a schedule that's pretty much been around since the beginning.
Awesome. Yeah, I just love hearing about, whether it's sort of management or workflow management. It's always super interesting, and I think always helpful for teams to talk about that. But Matt and Zach, you know, this has been incredibly helpful. Really, really great overview of what you and your team are up to over at Buckeye Relief. And it's always good just to touch base anyway, but very glad to have you on the show this week.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's a wrap on another episode of Growing Indoors. That was episode 6. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Matt and Zach over at Buckeye Relief in Ohio. I know I did. You know, it's always great to get a chance to sort of take a closer look at some of the vertical growing techniques, especially at a company like Buckeye, which is sort of shooting its vertical cultivation into the second story of a fairly large facility in Ohio's medical cannabis market. A lot to learn there. Again, like we dug in at a certain point just on basic, you know, foot traffic flow, within a facility. I think it's one of the more often overlooked things in indoor agriculture, especially at the scales we're talking about in this series. So something to think about. Again, we'll be continuing this series for the next couple weeks, every Thursday morning, talking to indoor growers around the industry and zooming in on, you know, very particular aspects of the craft. This series, of course, is brought to you by Foes, so a special shout out to them on the way out of this episode. And until next week, follow along with our coverage on CannabisBusinessTimes.com, where we take these topics and go even further in depth. But until then, we'll see you next week. Thanks.